GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Let's get into the hurling. It was the most epic of weekends, and at the end of it all, there's only one winner. Clare and Galway will do it again next week. We've just heard from John Myler. Cork will have to lick their wounds for another year. But Limerick through to an All-Ireland final, their first All-Ireland in 11 years now. It's fair to say the lads on Live 95 enjoyed it.
Flanagan coming along the end line. Looked like a puck across the top of the head. Hit towards Keane Lynch on the 14-yard line. Surely another goal chance for Limerick. Yeah! Keane Lynch put a stick to the back of the net. And Limerick get the goal that it deserved for all their efforts so far. 36 minutes on the clock. Limerick 1-12. Cork 14 points. A free already.
Right down
it's going to curl. I'm curling my right shoulder trying to get it to go over the bar. And out we come with the Hawkeye
once more. Away Hawkeye. Straight over the net. Great score by Dowling. And I tell you, he's made a great impact since coming on.
I don't think this is the time to tell Don LeGrady the Hawkeye is a computer and you can't tell it to go away.
We're all getting mad.
Peter Casey's out on the far side, he's too far out. And pass it back out towards Aaron Gallan. Can he get under possession? He can. Looks like he's fouled. Gallan has loads of time. Gallan lifts it and sweats it. Limerick and Lovell is right. Six in a row for the men from the Shannon side. It's 126 to 126. The pharmacist. Some medicine in this if he puts it in. 130 to 129. Shane Dowling lifts this and strikes this. Has to strike it before. Hits it 21. Strikes it to the back of the net. And Shane Dowling leaves the Hill 16 with the fist pump. And Cool goes up on the scoreboard.
What an impact, Dowling. He had the balls to go for it. And by God, did he stick it.
Pat Ryan in along the end line. Ahead of his man. Has he a chance to pick it up? Pat Ryan has. He'll finish it here if it goes towards the net. Pat Ryan.
Yes! Goal for Limerick, Pat Ryan.
The referee, Paul O'Doyle, blows the final whistle. Limerick are in the All-Ireland final on August 19th. Limerick 3.32, Cork 2.31.
There we are, beautifully done from the lads on Live 95, Don O'Sullivan and Hawkeye heading Donal O'Grady. We've got All-Ireland winners Jamesy O'Connor and Shane McGrath on the line with Clare and Tipperary respectively. Go away, Hawkeye, one of the great lines of the summer, I think, already, Jamesy.
Yeah, that's classic stuff. I think the lads just captured probably the essence of the whole weekend. And you know, you don't want to be over-egging it, Joe, you know, and getting all misty-eyed and everything. But it was just a treat to be in Croke Park, you know, on both days. And, you know, Saturday evening, I couldn't sleep on Saturday. And I was still buzzing from just the electricity of it. And I think, you know, I just heard your opening, you know, talk with Kieran and that. And I think you were spot on. I mean, there were tons of mistakes in this. There was, you know, obviously the wide count was high. There were failed pickups and hand passes that went astray. But that all added to it because yeah. Both sets of players just emptied themselves. And we got the exact same, you know, 24 hours later where, you know, Cork and Limerick were, you know, going down with cramp. At one stage, Keenan and Bill Cooper, who had probably belted each other for the previous 80 minutes, were lying literally prone, you know, on the ground, both suffering with cramp and, you know, massive credit to the four teams for the entertainment they provided. And I think it captured something that, you know, I mean, hurling people, obviously, we love the game and we get the game, but there seems to be, you know, no matter where you're on the airwaves today, people are talking about it. And that's great. And it was just an unbelievable 24 hours. Has there ever been a better 24 hours, you know, in the GAA? And I'd probably say it was hard to surpass it.
So maybe the best 24 hours in the GAA in what maybe is the best season in the history of the GAA? Like John Myler, Jamesy, said this is the best championship he can remember. Can you remember a better one? Obviously, 95 and 98, you're going to have a certain bias towards.
No, definitely not. No. I mean, the sheer, so it's the number of games, first of all. I mean, you know, you've gone from, what was it, 4 or 5 matches in Munster to, you know, was it 10 or whatever, 9 or 10? Hmm. You know, so the number of games doubled. And obviously the top team is playing each other. But right from the word go, I mean, even from, you know, Dublin Kilkenny on that opening, yeah, that opening weekend, you know, Galway and Offaly, even Offaly put up a great challenge for you know, 35, 40 minutes of that night in Tullamore, and taking the game to the regions as well and the home matches. You know, there have been so many classics. You know, Cork Tip was brilliant. Dave was describing as the greatest second half he'd ever seen, you know, down there. You keep going, Cork Tip or Cork Limerick, the first game was brilliant. Limerick Cork, you know, Clare Tip, or you know there's so many fantastic matches. And I definitely don't think there's been a better championship. And the two semi-finals, I mean, there's never been extra time in a semi-final before. I mean, okay, there may have been replays, but for both games to go to extra time and to go down to the wire on Saturday night, it was just drama upon drama. Mm-hmm. and you know, people just on the edge of their seats. And I mean, the tension on Saturday night, you know, Kenny was beside me in the studio, you know, and like when you have a brother involved, you know, you're heavily invested in it, more heavily than I was. But he was screaming for James Owens to blow it up, disgusted as Clare took that last puck on him. For the Clare lads to go the length of the field and show the composure they did and the nerve they did, and David Fitzgerald to give it to, you know, Jason McCarthy, who was under 21, and for him to nail that score, you couldn't buy that level of entertainment. And as I said, on Sunday, to see what it meant to the Limerick supporters coming out, just the absolute, you know, been through the ringer heart attack stuff and the elation they felt and just the sense of pride in what the team and the players had given them. You know, I said massive credit to the management teams who prepared them and most of all to the players, because it was just the best of what our sport has to offer.
Yeah, Shane McGrath's listening in as well. So Shane, this is where hurling struts around and hurling people see what kind of say, yeah, we told you so. I mean, what more do we have to do here, says hurling.
Yeah, and I was getting a bit of slack on Twitter there today about maybe saying that hurling is the greatest sport in the world, but I suppose my argument is that it's the fastest field sport in the world. There's more scores than any other game in it, and that's what just gets it so exciting. And, you know, I was thinking about it today. Like, I mean, 1995, James's Clare team came on the scene, and a lot of people then would have said, you know, they were bringing a physicality and a skill level that we'd never seen before, and that this is it.
Yeah.
Hurling's not getting any faster. Fast forward 10 years to 2005, and you have a Cork team where you think, yeah, this is the level now, forget about it. Next thing, Kilkenny take over, and you think, Asher, lads, there's no way it's getting any quicker than this. And even go back a few years ago, 2014, or the first day that Tip played Kilkenny in the All-Ireland final, you know, that was one of the highest scoring finals as well. And you thought, it's not getting any better. And come forward 4 years to this weekend, and the level has just gone through the roof again. I'm just kind of worried maybe, in 10 years' time, are we going to be able to watch hurling in real time, because it's just going to be so fast and it's just played by such quality athletes, and, you know, the scoring efficiency is unbelievable. But I suppose James, he said it, I mean, the Cork-Limerick game was the highest scoring game ever in the history of the Hurling Championship, and yet there was 31 wides in it.
Yeah, so like,
can you imagine if somebody didn't go over? I mean, it's crazy to think how good teams are and how well prepared they are, because I think the guy in the best position is getting the ball now all the time, and if he's not getting it or not doing the right thing with it, he's pulled up in it on the Monday or the Tuesday in video analysis, and he's saying, this is what we need to do to get it right for the next day. And I just think the skill level and the preparation has gone through the roof, and that's the quality we're getting now. And can it get any better? I'm afraid to say if it can or not. Like,
okay, that's very interesting, because I was going to ask you why. So maybe you're talking about the level of preparation and the ball always going to the right player. I was going to ask you, like, is the lightness of the slitter, is that a factor here? And where is this going to continue to go? Because we have scoring records being broken all over the place, Shane. So is that what you're putting it down to, just preparation? Like it's the skill set of the players, it's the physicality of the players, and as you said, a rake of wides. Like, I mean, does it get to a point where it's getting too easy to score?
I don't think it is. No, I just think that the work and the proper training that people are putting in nowadays, they know exactly what they need to improve on because of all the video analysis, because of all the technology nowadays. You know, management are able to see when exactly a guy is kind of coming to his peak with these GPS things. That, you know, maybe we should take him off. Maybe do we leave him on or not? No, I'm not a huge fan of the GPS thing, because if a guy is 4 or 5 points score and he looks like he's tired on the screen, I think the most modern day managers with a bit of common sense would say, he's staying on, I don't care what that computer says. But,
yeah,
you know, it is, you know, the hurlies, the quality of the hurlies and the size of the boss of the outfield hurlies. There was a great picture there of Seamus Harnedy and Nicky Quaid making the save on him. You've probably seen that,
yeah,
Joe. And it's interesting to see, if you look back at it, whose boss is actually bigger? Is Seamus Harnedy's boss bigger in his hurley, or is it Nicky Quaid? Because they both nearly look the same size. So, I mean, Pat Horgan is taking freeze with a huge boss as well. And, you know, all these things, like this litter is a lot lighter than it was maybe 20 years ago as well. But I think a lot of it goes down to how the players are preparing themselves now, the training that they're doing, the quality of training. And, you know, just they're putting everything into it, their whole life, for maybe six, 7 times a week training. And I think we as spectators are the real winners because of it, because these guys are coming in at such a level. And another thing is, Joe, it's a younger person's game now than what it was before. The average age now is 23, 24. Like, these guys are coming in, a lot of them, like, they've no baggage or anything, and I think they're full of confidence. I mean, take Peter Duggan's point there, but even not the point that everybody's talking about, the point in the first half where he hopped it off the ground with 3 lads following him. I mean, I would have been afraid in my life to hop the ball off the ground, and I was playing in Croke Park, in case it went away from me or whatever. I just wanted to get it into the forwards. Whereas these guys now they're coming with such confidence, they're like, they know they have the ability to do it. They're hopping off the ground and putting Lord of Bear, and it doesn't cost them a thought. And that's why I think we're just so lucky at the moment with the with the level of player that we have playing playing the game.
It's interesting you mentioned the equipment, because Daniel Carney did an interview over the weekend, and Jamesy, he was talking about how he was having a number of mishits. And what he did was he added, and we're literally talking ounces, like kind of coffee granules level of weight, but he added that to his hurl, and it seems for whatever reason to have cleaned up his mishits, and he's striking the ball a lot better. So it's this level of detail. I don't know if that kind of thing was going on in your day. But on that wider point, Shane's outlined a number of areas where the game's improving. We've no concerns, right? I mean, I kind of can't believe I'm saying this literally on the Monday after the greatest weekend of all time. So I appreciate the context. But we've no concerns with the rate of scoring and the scoring records tumbling and the direction the game is going, do we?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, okay, the purists might comment on maybe some of the defending and maybe some of the space that you know, teams are being afforded now. But, you know, you saw some fantastic defending as well. I mean, Nicky Quaid's flick on Harrod, he was just outrageous. I mean, the timing of it, you know, there's just so much to admire. I think that, yeah, there may be little things that, you know, we might allude to there. And as you said, like, you might have some people, you know, making the point, yeah, there were too many scores and that. But to be honest about it, it didn't detract from my enjoyment of either game of the weekend. Just come back to it, like, some player, I mean, Liam Doyle, what I can recall back in the day, you know, Liam Doyle's hurleys were all the same weight. I never did that in detail. It's just if it looked good and felt good, I'm the same hurley maker. But if it looked good and felt good in my hand, that was it. But some guys now, that's just the defined margins. And I suppose the other thing, Joe, in the past, I mean, if you were trying to analyse Kilkenny, I mean, you know, you probably saw Kilkenny three times. They might have had an easy enough pass in the Leinster semi-final. So maybe the Leinster final and the semi-final to go on, or maybe you even had one game to go on.
Yeah.
Now, with teams playing so many matches, you know, through the round robin, there's a lot more information there. And you know, I think even from a Limerick perspective yesterday, trying to analyse Anthony Nash and these puckouts, and what are they doing in the puckouts and how do we stop it? I think that would certainly help, because, you know, Limerick not only, I think, did a great job of probably, you know, putting a spoke in Cork's wheel in that department, but the quality of Nicky Quaid's puckouts as well and his distribution was just phenomenal, I think, particularly in the first half on Sunday. So, yeah, the sports sciences is a help. The level of detail the teams are going into now, the extended backroom teams, it's all finding these small percentages. And as I said, we're seeing, you know, the benefit of it on the field, you know, particularly at the weekend.
Yeah, no, it was pretty amazing. Let's jump in then to some of the analysis. So Galway Clare on the Saturday, the first 16, 17 minutes of that game, Jamesy, I'd say you were pretty worried. Like, it was car crash stuff from a Clare point of view. Like, the puckouts weren't working. Tui a few times, like, there was one directly to Joe Canning. There was another one directly to another Galway player at one point, and they were popped over the bar. There was, like, the Cooney goal was just a mess. Like, Clare were at sixes and sevens, and everything about it was not going well. No passes, no flow. And then we've talked before about the movement of the Galway forwards. That seemed to be causing untold damage. Is it as simple as Colin Galvin went back and just added a bit of solidity and kind of got them moving with puckouts? They had an extra man then, and Tony Kelly came back. That seemed to be, certainly watching on TV, that seemed to be the moment that the ship was steadied anyway.
Yeah, I think that was the catalyst. But I mean, yeah, 16, 17 minutes in, Joe, I mean, it looked like a rout. You know, 1-7 to a point down. But I think Galway and the Aldonagh would be seriously, you know, and silently fuming that, listen, they didn't put this game away, because, you know, they had their foot on Clare's throat, and really the wides, a couple of goal chances were butchered. And had they taken those opportunities, I mean, this you know, it would have been gone beyond Clare's capability to haul it back. So, you know, anytime I always feel that anytime the wides count gets into double digits in a big match, you know, you're in trouble. Galway shot 12 wides in the first half. Now, three or four of those were Hawkeye. I mean, they're a foot the other way and they're inside the post, and you know, it's a different game and a different result. But there were certainly a couple of goal chances that Galway blew as well. That had they taken one of those, I think it would have been the fatal blow. Massive credit to the Clare management, because they had to do something to steady the ship and just give Clare a platform and a foothold. And certainly Galvin is a guy that Don Maloney and Gerry O'Connor would have massive faith in, because you know, they know this guy since 2009 as a minor. They have huge faith in his ability. I suppose he was the right man for the job. And remember, they could have given that role to Jamie Shannon, they could have given that role to Shane Amore. But Galvin, I think, was the man, you know, with the nerve, maybe, you know, to read the game and maybe, you know, pick out those short passes.
Yeah.
And Kelly to midfield, he got two huge scores. that were vital again and just giving Clare a bit of oxygen and a foothold in the match. So a combination, I suppose, of those moves. Peter Duggan as well put his hand up because David Reedy was over on Pádraig Mainneon on the far wing, and that was you couldn't go down that side of the field with the puck out. So Duggan really had to stand up, and he did. And even if he wasn't catching it cleanly, at least he was keeping it in the general area, getting it to ground, and did a chance of winning it on the break. But to get to coming up to half time two behind, I felt it was a minor miracle. I mean, I couldn't believe how we were two behind. And okay, Galway got the 2 points going into the break, but it was really, really Galway's wastefulness in that first half that you know allowed Clare. You know, the opportunity and massive credit to Clare for the defiance and the resilience they showed just to stay in the match and you know, to score 17 points in the second half, they deserved the draw.
Yeah, what was your reading of Shane?
Yeah, very similar. I thought Colm Galvin going back was a massive thing. I was reading about it today. He was on the ball 19 times, and with that, you know, I think he only gave away the ball 4 times, and he set up 1-4, and you know, that obviously the goal and extra time for Aaron Shanahan. And Aaron Shanahan, I mean, what a guy, like, did his cruciate there in November, I think, and came back, and when he jumped up for that ball, it seems like we should all probably do our cruciate, because he came down and he absolutely buried it into the net. But I mean, just my kind of take on it is, I was looking through the teams of the week and stuff like that, and normally those teams of the week are made up by 2, maybe 3, sometimes 4 Galway forwards, and there was not one Galway forward on any of the teams of the week. And I feel that the Galway forward line as a unit, it just didn't really click. Now, I know 130 was scored and everything, and it was phenomenal, like, you know, but I just think that the Galway forward line, as a unit, like, they're going to be raging with themselves that they, as James said, they just didn't put this to bed. I mean, Hill 16 seemed to be a bad end to shoot in there on Saturday night, because James said Galway had 12 wides. I think Clare had 7 wides in the first half of extra time shooting into the hill. So whatever it was about it, and maybe Hawkeye was, you know, maybe the motor was burnt out in Hawkeye at that stage. They couldn't call any more things, so... But I just feel that Galway are just going to be so thick and have so many things to kind of build on for the next day that I think that they are probably going to edge it. I think the match being on a Thurles is a big thing too, because this Clare team are made for Croke Park. I think Tony Kelly on Saturday evening when he hears the match is on in Thurles, not Croke Park, because he just loves that space from Croke Park. He seems to flourish up there saying, oh God, why isn't on Croke Park again? Yeah. And then another thing then, Joe, was... Near the end, coming towards the end of the game, Hall of Donoghue looks over his shoulder and he sees 4 guys of All-Stars, Joe Canning, Garrod McInerney, he sees Conor Whelan, he sees David Burke, and he sees Johnny Glynn, 1/3 of the mainstay of his team that couldn't finish the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, they still dug in, and I thought they showed huge resolve when Aaron Shanahan got the goal, that they went straight up the field and they got a point straight away. Jason Flynn got the score, and... You know, I mean, everyone talks about, okay, Johnny Cohen got the point, and he did, rightly so. But, I mean, that man again, Dahi Burke, the catch he made, burst through for 10 yards, hand pass off to Johnny Cohen, and, you know, fair play to him. He had the balls to put it over the bar after maybe dropping one short early on in the game. And obviously, you know, we all remember the last scored in by Clare, by Jason, wasn't it? And,
yeah.
And very similar to Donald Donovan's in 2013. Donald will probably say it was a better score further out in the wing, but I just feel that Galway will probably have more to improve on than Clare for the next day, Joe. And I think that's why Galway are going to push on now. Injuries aside as well, that's going to be a big thing. It's looking like
We're waiting to hear on Canning, and we're waiting to hear on McInerney, and I presume Dahi Burke's ankle isn't loving the thought of another 70-minute game, so hot on the heels of the weekend. James, you might pick up on 2 points there. One, the Croke Park factor for Clare, and if there is something in that, and you know, Tony Kelly and these players just preferring the space at Croke Park. And then secondly, Shane's talking about Galway fuming. You mentioned fuming as well. Like, is this almost a draw against Kilkenny, and they're going to come out like they did against Kilkenny in that replay and almost try and blow Clare out of the water here? Those two things, I would say, are on Clare minds this week.
Yeah, so we'll take the Croke Park thing first. Yeah, I mean, whatever it is, even going back to 95, you know, specifically, we won the 2 games there, and I suppose we took confidence from that going forward. And, you know, we just saw, and Dale would have alluded to it, you know, that we always felt it was our field, and, you know, maybe that's a bit of cockiness, but we just had a good record up there. And obviously the lads went there in 2013 and lit it up and have great memories. So, you know, it's probably a disappointment considering that the Dublin-Roscommon match will be a hard sell and a dead rubber. Now, I know the under-21 football match or under-20 football match is on there as well, and, you know, that decision was made. But, you know, Thurles, there's plenty of space in Thurles. Kelly and those guys have lots of good memories of big wins in Thurles. They beat Tip there, obviously. you know, for the first time in years earlier this summer. So, you know, I think there'll be no excuses about the pitch. I mean, you know, whether it's Turriff or Croke Park, they're both, you know, perfect pitches of the two, I suppose, premier venues in the country. And I think, you know, I don't think Hilary Imlay and Clare can make any excuses that, you know, we'd have beaten Galway and Croke Park.
Yeah.
It is what it is now. And, okay, that's it. You ready yourself for it, you prepare yourself for it, and it's up to us to prepare for what Galway are going to bring to us. So that's the first thing.
Yeah,
I think we'd prefer Croke Park, but, you know, Turriff
no
is, and
yeah,
we got to get ready for it.
Galway attitude,
the second point,
then.
The danger, yeah, there's definitely a danger of a backlash. I mean, you know, if you're a Galway player and they're sitting down as a group collectively to look at the video, the video nasty, some aspects of that first half. Now, huge positives in terms of the way they just suffocated Clare, and Clare couldn't get out of their own half in that first 15, 20 minutes. You know, there's positives there, but certainly, you know, the wide count, the just not converting those chances. And, you know, there could be a backlash, but it's not easy, Joe, to go, like, this is their second replay now in a month. And I know, even going back to 98, even 99, you know, we drew a tip in Munster 99, lucky to get a draw the first day, blew them away the second day, you know, then drew with Galway in the quarterfinal, again by the skin of our teeth, won the second day, but then, you know, there was very little left in the tank for Kilkenny in the semi-final. And that's the danger for Galway now, that, listen, there's a lot of these guys, David Burke, Johnny Cohen, you know, Canning, you know, Joseph Cooney, Conor Cooney, these guys were around in kind of, you know, 2010, 2011, 2012. They've been into Ireland semi-finals. They've been to three finals. The last thing I think Galway need now is another game, you know, a week after, you know, 90 minutes of savagery, which is what we had in Croke Park. And the big winners in all this, I think, are Limerick, because, you know, there's no doubt about it. Whoever comes through next weekend, there has to be a dent in the tank, you know, come the final in 3 weeks' time. So I would worry about the backlash. There's no doubt about that. Now, Clare have to prepare for it, but the injuries are going to be a massive factor, because, you know, Joe Kenny, I think, you know, the feeling is he'll be good to go. But if Grove McInerney is a calf strain, they're notoriously slow. And with the calf, you can do the warm-up, you can feel fine, and then suddenly, bang, you feel the knife stabbing you in the back of the leg, and it's gone. And kind of Whelan, I think, as well, as a concern about him, and I'm not sure what the story was related in Chewy. So, like, two or three injuries, particularly the back for Galway. I mean, they have cover up front. You know, Jason Phil step in, Niall Burke step in. You don't feel like you're really losing that much. But if you lose your centre back and you potentially lose a corner back like Chewy, I don't know if Galway have the same depth at the back, and you know, that could be a big factor. But there's a danger for Clare. Clare have to be, you know, well aware that we dodged a major bullet. We have to be realistic about this. If we're as open at the back as we were in the first half, Galway won't be as generous.
One quick one on that then briefly, and then we'll get into the other game. Will they start with Colm Galvin as a free man again, or will they just play it by ear a little bit?
I think they're more likely to revert to orthodox, and maybe Galvin with the role, maybe to sit back a little bit deeper, or maybe the half forwards come a bit deeper, and, you know, when, let's say, when the Galway wing backs has the ball and he's going along, that straight away Jamie Shannon or Shane Amore or whoever they pick on the wings are getting back in, maybe to support the full back line. So I think that'll be plan A. I think they'll start in an orthodox manner, but if they have to resort to a sweeper, revert to a sweeper, it's not the worst scenario. And Clare played it long enough and are quite comfortable playing it. You know, so I think that'll be plan A, but plan B will be there, and possibly plan C if required as well.
Yeah. One last quick point from that game, Shane, was Clare taking their time at half time, coming back out. Three times, I think, the officials went in to give them a little nudge, and they took their merry time. And then it was quite stunning the way a Galway player smashed a Clare lad over the touchline, kind of like a helmet charge almost, and Joe Canning popped over a sideline cut from 60 metres.
Yeah, and it was funny even watching Michal Donoghue going around, and, you know, I'm not the best at lip reading, but I have a fair idea what he was saying to the Galway boy, you know, at the sign of lack of respect maybe and all this. But I thought Gerry O'Connor and Donal Maloney answered it brilliantly. He said, you know, I said, if you went 1-7 to a pint down, you would have a lot to talk about at half time as well. And I don't think coming out late or anything like that had any real bearing on the game. You know, maybe got the Galway boys going, and for the first few minutes, and for Joe's sideline, was just phenomenal. Like, really, I mean, most lads are lucky to strike it over the bar from there, but and especially the grass, the way it is in Croke Park, anyone that's played there, it's almost like an AstroTurf effect. So to score a sideline up there, and Tony Kelly's sideline at the other end, and Mark Coleman's sideline, I mean, just ridiculous still. But
could either
I thought the clear management could
either of you hit sidelines?
No, I was normally just watching it dribble along the ground, hoping for the best that one of the boys would get it. So I'm not notorious for sidelines anyway, no.
Yeah. Jamesy, could you hit one if you had to in training?
Let you get near it.
Huh?
Baker wouldn't let you get near it. Yeah. That was his sphere of influence.
I mean, literally, I don't even understand the physics. Like, I look at it and I don't even know how they do it.
It's technique, yeah, Joe. I love the technique. I mean, you know, it's a bit like a wedge. You know, if you're going to get that elevation in the ball, you know, your hurley's got to be coming in at an angle. And in a way, the only way you can get your hurley in that angle is for your knee to almost genuflect and hit the ground. So a lot of it is technique, but these guys have just taken it to a different level. And the distance, you know, to get that distance and that elevation, you've got to strike it absolutely purely. And I mean, Canning's one, you know, you just knew, yeah, he's going to bend this in off the left post. The natural flight would take it left to right. But Kelly's one, and Kelly takes it off his left side. The angle was narrower. I mean, it was outrageous. And yeah, it was massive pressure because I think Clare were two behind
it. They were two behind,
with the clock running out. And, you know, it was a brilliant score. And Kelly, when Clare needed it, you know, delivered it. Just on the half-time thing, Joe, Cork left Clare for a good probably 5 minutes at half-time in the Munster final. In stifling heat, and I'm not a fan of it, and I wasn't a fan of it, you know, of Clare doing it to Galway either the weekend. I could understand why Niall Dunne, when the Galway players, you know, would have been annoyed by it. And I think it's something the authorities just need to do. Listen, lads, this isn't going to become a feature now. We're clamping down on this.
Yeah.
You have 10 minutes or whatever it is. It's long enough. Get on with it.
Yeah, fair enough. And on my sideline cut curiosity, are you hitting down on it like a wedge, Jamesy? You're not trying to cut under it. Are you hitting actually down on the ball?
No, oh, you're trying to cut under it. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
Yeah. You're just aiming. It's just behind the ball, but I think it's very, very much a technique thing. If you're coaching kids, you know, you're just showing them that, okay, listen, just think about the physics of it. You know, your hurley's got to be coming in, you know, at an angle, a bit like a wedge that gets the elevation in the ball, and for your hands to get in that position, the only way that can happen really is if your body gets lower. And as the technique is nearly almost, you know, your right knee or your left knee, depending on which side you're taking, is almost genuflecting. But the technique, and you know, we saw Ronan Maher doing it earlier in the year, you know, scoring a Mark Coleman, outrageous skill, and they're doing it from further distances now, which is, you know,
yeah,
it's almost like the concession of a freak. Some of these guys now putting the ball out over the line.
Yeah, it's a fairly magic thing to watch. Limerick 3-32, Cork 2-31 then yesterday. So, like, Galway Clare, in some respects, Shane, was a little bit of a surprise. Like, I think people thought Galway would, in the end, win that in normal time by a couple of points. 2, 3, 4 points was generally what people were saying. Limerick Cork, everybody had high hopes for. And then, weirdly, when Galway Clare is so good, you kind of think, well, we can't get two in a row. It's just not possible. And then, whoom. We got it. The stat everybody's quoting today is that Limerick's bench, Shane Dowling chief amongst them, Limerick's bench contributed 2-6, whereas Cork's bench managed just a single point. And we had John Myler on there in the first hour of the show, and look, he was fairly upfront about it. He kind of looking at the two benches and feels, frankly, that's where the game was, won and lost, when it boils down to it.
Yeah, I'd agree totally. I thought Shane Dowling was absolutely massive. Just what he did for him. I mean, the first thing he did, Joe, anyway, was put his hand up for a free that was in between the 265s out near the sideline and into the hill as well. And, you know, he came out, and I tell you, he hit that free with confidence because it hit the net at the back of the goals, and it was going on for another 10, 20 yards. I mean, as you said, Limerick's bench contributed 2-6, Cork's bench 1 point. And the other side of it was Cork brought back on three guys that had played maybe the full majority of the game. And there's one guy in particular, okay, Shane Kingston came back on, I think, I'm not sure it was Christopher Joyce, and Daniel Kearney. Daniel Kearney got taken off with cramp. And I mean, a guy coming off with cramp, to bring him back on, I just found it a very, very strange one. I was up there yesterday and doing a bit, like, and I was just watching Daniel Kearney even coming back on. He wasn't right at all, like, and the other guy, Seamus Harnedy, he really worked his socks off for the team. He was carrying an injury coming into it. He picked up a dead leg in the first half, and he led the team out for the second half, and he was only half the man that he could have been, like. But my point is getting to is, did Cork not trust the guys who were on the bench yesterday, or did they just not have the players that they thought they had maybe in the squad? Because to bring back on three lads where one of them is clearly not able to come back on, to leave on a guy with a dead leg and, you know, a hamstring injury, whereas Limerick, the guys they brought on, they all contributed massively to the game. I mean, Pat Ryan contributed massively. He got his goal. He gave a bad hand pass with about, you know, time almost coming to the end. It could have been another goal. William O'Donoghue comes on. Shane Dowling comes on, scores 1-4. Barry Nash comes on. I mean, Peter Casey, he's just a nightmare for any backman to see coming on. Mm. And like, they all contributed massively, whereas you just didn't get the same buzz off the Cork bench. But I was just wondering, and after the game, like, I mean, do Cork have this really strong squad? And I honestly don't think they have.
No, another I don't think they do. And I think Myler has said he needs to go out and find a few more players, is the truth.
Yeah, and I honestly think he does. Like, and I mean, I see himself and Fraggy. I mean, was the communication very good there yesterday? I don't think it was, because a couple of times John Myler was bringing on someone and Fraggy was kind of, he almost looked bemused as to why is this happening. And, right. You know, there are small things you kind of pick up on. It could mean absolutely nothing, but that's what I, from my viewpoint, that's what I was seeing going on. And I thought that maybe was another factor in the changes that were actually going on and the times that they were happening as well, Joe.
Okay, that's an interesting point. Jamesy, what jumped out at you about this game? Maybe aside from the bench, I think we're all in agreement that maybe was the key part of the game.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the fact against Kilkenny as well, you know, a fortnight earlier, that Casey, Dowling and Will O'Donoghue, you know, came off the bench and made a massive contribution. You know, I mean, Casey got 2 points, you know, set up Dowling for another one. Dowling got a really good score. And, you know, I think that gave credit to Limerick management and to the players themselves, as, you know, you can come off the bench and you can make a contribution. But Limerick's depth at the moment is phenomenal. I mean, remember meeting Gary Kirby a couple of months ago, and I think he met Kevin Downs, and he was saying that Downs was saying that he was fighting, I think, with Barry Nash, and I think it might have been Barry Murphy or Pat Ryan, for the number 26 spot in the squad. And and Barry Murphy was man of the match, I think, in that league game against Galway and Salt Hill, in the full forward line with Flanagan and Gillan. He was excellent that day, and he wasn't in the 26 league yesterday. So that tells you the depth that John Kiley has, and I says, you know, that's something that probably only Kilkenny have had. And what it means for the management team is that now, you know, okay, they won't be doing a whole lot this week, it'll be about recovery, but they'll be training matches, probably one big one next weekend, maybe one midweek, and certainly a big one, maybe 8-9 days out from the All-Ireland final. And how competitive are those matches going to be?
Yeah, well,
and everybody's looking over their shoulder, and that's a massive plus to have, because it raises the bar for the starting 15 to hold your place, and obviously for them, the guys that are competing to get into that 26.
Yeah, John Kiley says the B team often win, which is the amazing thing for them. It was interesting, Jamesy, I'll put to both of you, you're both All-Ireland winners. So it was interesting that independently of each other, Shane Dowling on the pitch basically announces to Croke Park, or pleads to Croke Park and everybody at home, to kind of leave the players alone now and let them try and prepare for this All-Ireland final away from the hype. And then in his press conference, John Kiley opened his press conference. It was quite unusual, especially given what we had just seen, you know, the weekend we had just had. But he opened his press conference by effectively saying to the journalists, you know, if the players are contacted here, I'm shutting this whole thing down. You know, maybe a fair enough request, but it was kind of striking that was on his mind, the hype getting to the players, the build of getting to the players. There's like almost this, I don't know, is it like an inherited sense or a residual fear that, you know, the hype will get to Limerick somehow, that maybe it did in 07 in some respects. I mean, you figure in 07 they were just up against an amazing Kilkenny side. But it was very interesting that so soon, so quickly after this epic, this like kind of, you know, career-defining win in some ways, that was on their minds, Dowling's minds and Kiley's minds. You've both been in this situation. Like, was that in your thoughts, Shane, straight away after a semi-final?
No, it wasn't. Not really, because I actually really enjoyed the build-up and all that. But I suppose we were lucky enough that we kind of got into a few finals really close together, and you kind of get used to a routine. But I always found that, you know, you kind of maybe allocate someone, a family member or someone close to you, say, look, I'll get the tickets, will you just look after them for me and get that parked up straight away? And, you know, obviously there's excitement about getting the suits and things like that, and, you know, you with the way things are nowadays, you want to be looking well as well. So I mean, all those things will all be getting taken care of in probably the next week, 10 days or so, and they can all be parked aside. But I suppose it depends on the character you are, Joe, and what works for you and what doesn't work for you. But I mean, some of the guys in there, take Shane Dowling, for example. He did a fantastic interview, I thought, after the game. It was very honest, very open, but it's not going to give anybody any advantage who they're going to be playing in All-Ireland final. He's just pleading with the media, like, because I've been working in Limerick now for the last 9-10 years or so, and, you know, they have do a tendency to get maybe carried away, and, you know, they have a big city in there as well, and maybe a lot of people having a huge hurling knowledge in around that. They only know that they're in the final now, and these are the kind of people that are kind of going to drive the hype through the roof. But I think you have a bunch of players there now, Joe, that are used to winning. You've guys that have All-Ireland club medals in the Limerick squad, have colleges medals, have minor medals, under 21 medals. These guys are used to winning All-Ireland. It's not that they're going to be fazed by that. Obviously, it's going to be the biggest stage of all, but, you know, I think that they just still get all that parked up now in the next week, the tickets and all that, and get the suits organised and, you know, get the girlfriend's bags up to the hotels there the few days beforehand and not be worrying about those things, because it can be a worry sometimes for some of the players, you know, where things are going and how they're getting there. But I think it's whatever works. Yeah, I heard Jackie talking the other day that he always watched up for the match.
Yeah.
I always watched up for the match too. I thought there's a bit of crack and it's great when you're involved. And, you know, you said it already, Joe. I think you hit the nail on the head. 07, I think Limerick went up in hope more than anything,
yeah,
because they played the greatest hurling team ever to play. And that's from someone who has lost a few All-Irelands as well. And they're going up this time, I think, fully believing that they can win this because they have a great squad. And I think that's the difference for the players now. They're used to winning. They'll be fine. Let everyone else worry about what's going on in the back on the outside with all the media and all that crack.
Yeah.
But they'll be fine. And I think this bunch of players are really looking forward to the build-up and to the All-Ireland final.
Like. Yeah. Quick thought from you on it, James. Because like, it strikes me, you don't want to almost make the players fear the fact that there is hype. You know, like you can say we're going to stay away from all the hype, and then a player could be stressing because, frankly, the hype's unavoidable because they all work in the real world. Like, there is a point where you have to sit around and go, I mean, I'm asking you this as opposed to telling you, seeing as you've been there, but there is, I presume, a point where you have to go, we can't avoid this. We live in the real world, and actually go out and try and embrace it and enjoy it and, you know, do the odd interview here or there if you want to. But, like, trying to almost, you know, plead, like, leave us away from it is actually going to be more stressful than just dealing with the reality of it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, going back to our time, you know, I think we embraced it. I mean, you know, it was brilliant. I mean, it was uncharted territory, and I think Loughnane, I think, embraced it. And, you know, we you know, did the press night, and some fellas were more comfortable talking to the media than others, and that was fine. If you wanted to talk, you talked, and if you didn't, you slipped away. But I think, you know, John Kiley, I think, was involved as a player with Limerick in the, you know, in the 1990s, and I think he was selected with John Allan maybe back in 2013. So, I mean, he's coming maybe from a place where, you know, he's been there before, where he's seen Limerick maybe getting ahead of themselves, and maybe, you know, things were done or things happened, and it might be local businesses getting fellas to open shops, yeah, or whatever. And it was just, I suppose, an instinctive reaction that we can't repeat maybe mistakes that were made in the past. Mm. And I think as well, listen, there was huge hype in Limerick, you know, after the third round of the Munster round robin, because they'd beaten Tipperary, they'd gone and secured that epic draw with the 14 players in Cork, and they'd, you know, hammered Waterford. And suddenly, you know, for the game in Ennis, you were hearing about two minibuses from Hamlets in West Limerick coming to the game, and people booking the All-Ireland weekend in Croke Park. And you know, and there was nothing Kiley or any of the players could have done about that.
Mm.
It's totally outside their control. But whether, you know, you just get, it's contagious and players get infected by that, and you're listening to all this talk and all this hype, and whether they discussed that as a group, you know, maybe after the Clare match, because there was disappointment at not, you know, getting to the Munster final, and said, right, okay, maybe we got ahead of ourselves. And it was their third game as well, and there was a factor, and they ran to Clare probably at the wrong time. But I think that there may have been some discussion about that, about, you know, we've got to be grounded now.
Yeah.
And he had them in a circle in the huddle after the game, and he was certainly barking out orders that, you know, there's still unfinished business here. There's no silverware today. There's still another game to be played. And I thought the Limerick players, I mean, the energy that they will bring, Joe, in 3 weeks' time is bad news for Galway or Clare,
or
whoever
they're
going to run into, because, you know, they are going to be very, very hard to beat, particularly, as I said, winning it in the manner they did, 6 points down with 10 minutes left.
Yeah, it's a fairly remarkable journey so far. James O'Connor, Shane McGrath, thanks so much, lads. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Joe.
GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.